Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here on Global Patriot Radio. We can be found on blogtalkradio.com, of course. It is Wednesday, December 28th, 2022. It is the last Wednesday of this current year, 2022. Yikes! I know. Where did it go? Where did this year go? And as always, if you want to interact with the show, you can listen live on the internet, of course, at blogtalkradio.com. You can also call in to listen, 319-527-6706, which also gives you the option, of course, to hit the 1 and talk to me. You can always contact me 24/7, 365, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. I even respond. Of course, you can always go to Facebook. You know what? Just type in your search bar, Hank Jones Poly Sports. Guess what? My page comes up. I actually put something on there today in addition to getting my free Candy Crush lives and whatnot. And, of course, on Twitter, at HPolySports, always there, checking in, seeing what's going on. Usually good stuff. I am hanging out here, of course, in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost. Little Aussie, been fed, kind of jumpy, kind of, you know, she was bucking for it, let's put it that way. Wife is working over in acoustic Hank land. She gets to spend time with little Aussie when she's doing that. I have to keep my door closed so I don't bother her and whatnot. You know what? We're here every day. It's true. Global Patriot Radio has a show every day of the week of the year. It starts, of course, on Mondays, 6 p.m. Eastern time. The Vito Esposito Show with Vito and Big Al, Mamma Mia No Sharia. Tuesdays, it's Eric with the Cross and Crescent Discussion. Sort of a compare and contrast between Islam and Christianity, or should I say Islam versus Christianity. Why am I saying it like that? It's to show that, I'm sorry, Jesus is the way of the life. Of course, Wednesdays, I am here at 5:30. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report, also at 6 p.m. Eastern. Fridays, usually around noon, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday. And then Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern till midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk, assisted by the beautiful Christie with Revealing the Truth About Islam. And then Sundays, Eric's back at 3 o'clock Eastern with Real Interfaith Dialogue, which is a continuation of his Cross and Crescent discussion. There's actually a couple people listening on the phones right now. I recognize them both, Sue from New Mexico and, of course, Hawkeye Mike. Welcome back, sir. Hope he had a good Christmas last week and whatnot. We stay in touch by text, even when he can't be here, but hey, today's first internet laughy. This is from a buddy of mine. I grew up with this guy every summer up in Wisconsin. He had it on Facebook. It's a picture of a guy with his pointing to his head like, I'm really thinking tough. Using Venmo to send $601 to Zelensky so that Ukraine actually gets audited. Oh, for those that don't know, not sure why you wouldn't at this point, but anything 600 bucks or over, the IRS is going to start looking at, especially PayPal and Venmo, believe it or not. Yeah, I know. Unbelievable. But 601 bucks to Zelensky, then guess what? Means they got to audit Ukraine, doesn't it? Mike says he did have a great Christmas, as did we. I hope you all did as well. So that's the first internet laughy for today, and it's brilliant, of course. I don't put unbrilliant stuff are out there. So let's get to our bits. Last Wednesday, we lost Harvey Jett. He was a former guitarist for the band Black Oak, Arkansas. He passed away at 73, no cause listed. Black Oak, Arkansas, you remember them? I'm sorry, I was not going to put any of their songs out here. Remember Jim Dandy to the Rescue? Kind of an obnoxious song, if you ask me, but whatever. We also lost former Denver Bronco running back Ronnie Hillman to to renal medullary carcinoma at age 31. It's basically a kidney cancer. Very sad. Very well loved by his former teammates and by others in the league. 31's just too young. I'm sorry. We had two losses last Thursday as well. MMA competitor and sometime pro wrestler Stephen Bonner passed away at age 45. The suspected cause is heart attack or complications of heart issues. We lost songwriter, arranger, and music producer Tom Bell at age 79 after a lengthy illness. He worked with legends in the music industry, Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff. That was MFSB, The Sound of Philadelphia. Daryl Hall, The Delphonics, The Stylistics, The Spinners, Dusty Springfield, Archie Bell and The Drells, Dionne Warwick and The OJs. Yeah, I'd say that's pretty high profile, pretty high power stuff. Saturday, Christmas Eve, we lost Hall of Fame LPGA golfer Kathy Whitworth, age 83. She'd collapsed at a Christmas party. She was the first woman on the LPGA tour to reach $1 million in career earnings. I believe she is still the winningest golfer on that tour as well. And then Sunday, Christmas Day, we lost actress Rita Walter, unknown causes, age 71. She's best known for her 10-plus seasons on As the World Turns. She played a character named Carol Deming. Ironically, she left that role on Christmas Day of 1981. So there you go. Yesterday, we lost Jamaican-American music artist Joe Mercer Marley at age 31. He's found in his car after apparently suffering an asthma attack. Now, he was the grandson, reggae legend Bob Marley, who's still to this day is a true music icon, not just a reggae icon. He also a gentleman who died too young, just 36, when he passed away from cancer. I remember that back in 1981. I was driving back to Iowa City. I'd gone to home in Chicago for a weekend. That's right. I was driving back to Iowa City, and I heard it on the radio. Got back, and a bunch of my fraternity brothers were all playing Bob Marley music. It was a sad day. 36. Well, here is his grandson going at 31. Don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering and messaging service. For your service company, you need 24-hour service, but you don't want to be there 24 hours answering the phones. Hey, Alliance Communications can handle it. You have a small medical clinic or even a large medical clinic. Hey, you need someone on call. Well, they can handle it. They do a great job. They work all over the country, and as a consequence, they also use remote staff. So they're always available. So they're not going to have hurricanes that take down their system, that kind of thing. Got staff everywhere that can help out. That's another thing. If you like remote work, you don't feel like going into an office, hey, give them a call. Their number is 800-555-3738. You can visit them on the web at alliancecommunications.com. Great folks doing great work. Another internet laughy. This one's from the Babylon Bee, and it is too damn good not to share and spread around. The article is titled, Are You a Woman? 12 Signs to Look For. Now, I haven't read this yet. I've tried to make it a point on some of these not to read them. So this one is titled, Are You a Woman? 12 Signs to Look For. Let me read it. What is a woman? Nobody knows. Not even some Supreme Court nominees. But we've come up with a few key indicators to look for. Run through this list and keep track of how many yes answers you come up with. The more affirmatives, the more likely you are a woman. It actually says the more likely you're a chick. Number one, are you always cold? That's got to be. Number two, has a human ever popped out of you? Number three, have you ever decorated a bed with six or more pillows? Yep, I'm married to a woman. Four, can you tell the difference between cream white and rustic farmhouse white? Have you run into a curb in the past 24 hours? Be honest. Number six, okay, this is, I don't mean it to be, but it says, do you bleed, like for an extended period of time at regular intervals? Okay, enough. Number seven, does it take you over 3 hours to decide what you want to eat? What you should also add is, do you make sure that you put it on Facebook? Number eight, are you currently a member of at least three pyramid schemes? Number nine, do you find simple movie plots hard to follow? That one I'm not going to get into. Number 10, do you frequently describe your emotional state as fine when you are not, in fact, fine? Number 11, is your Starbucks drink order anything other than black coffee? Number 12, do you have two X chromosomes? Yeah, unfortunately, given today's climate, it's a necessary poll, I guess. Let's get to our stuff. Hey, it is good to see Whoopi Goldberg back in proper form. You know, her traditional role as a racist and anti-Semitic bitch. Remember, she was suspended from The View back in January for some comments. So she denied doubling down. Anti-Defamation League criticized her for some comments in which she seemed to question whether the Holocaust was racially motivated. In a statement obtained by USA Today, she said her remarks were taken out of context. She drew criticism. She said, recently, while doing press in London, I was asked about my comments from earlier this year. I tried to convey to the reporter what I had said and why, and attempted to recount that time. It was never in my intention to appear as if I was doubling down on hurtful comments. It's been like rabbis and old and new friends weighing in. She also noted that her support for Jewish people has not wavered and never will. She says, I'm still learning a lot, believe me. I've heard everything everyone said to me. She's now saying, at first she said the Holocaust was not about race. She said, my best friend said, not for nothing is there no box on the census for the Jewish race. So that leads me to believe that we're probably not a race. There's a thing she said that basically you couldn't just spot Jews on the street in Nazi Germany or Nazi Eastern Europe. But somebody pointed out Nazis saw Jews as a race. She says, but you could see me on the street. You couldn't see them. So, of course, she made it about her. Then she said, this is the visual. She says, that was the point I was making. But you would have thought that I'd taken a big old stinky dump on the, you know, did she even need to say it like that? Number one. And number two, do we really, really need to have that visual in our heads? Yeah, so anyway, she had said it was not about race, and then she came back and said, in a sense, that it still wasn't about race, or that more accurately, that her race was more important. She says, they did it to black people, too. Do you know that there were very few black people in Nazi Germany at the time? So, yeah. So here's the weirdest part. She sort of did offer an apology, but it's almost pathetic as the original story. It's just really sad. I mean, this lady is, I don't know any other way to say it. Maybe she's not totally anti-Semitic, but she's trying to say that basically that I'm black, and so I'm more persecuted than any Jewish person. You know, just stop already. She sucks. Her show sucks. Okay, let's get away from that one. Kind of a shocker Sunday in the NFL. Arizona Cardinals defensive lineman J.J. Watt announced via Twitter this season is his last. So basically, after their game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he said he's hanging up his cleats. He posted a picture with his wife and his son, and then he posted a second picture with his wife and his son and his parents. He said, Koa, that's his son's name, Koa's first ever NFL game, my last ever NFL home game. My heart is filled with nothing but love and gratitude. It's been an absolute honor and a pleasure. They actually have two more games, but that was his last home game. So, yeah, he's just basically saying that's it. I'm hanging him up. obviously a Hall of Famer. Obviously, I don't want to say one of the all-time greats, but certainly in the conversation. He also proved, though, that he was a great guy off the field. Remember, 2017, Houston was hit by Hurricane Harvey. He raised $37 million to help in that effort. He won the Walter Payton Man of the Year award that season. He can't be overstated how important that was. It was not, I've been through hurricanes, but this one was different. This, even, what we had in Central Florida this year, Nicole really wasn't much. Some wind, some rain, but Ian was a real rain event. It dropped a lot of rain because it didn't go through as fast as some of our other storms do. But Harvey hung around forever and just absolutely flooded out Houston and the surrounding area. I mean, it wasn't Katrina, because Katrina had another issue, a flood, but not from rain, but from a broken levee or broken levees. But Houston was just, I remember we even got bands over in South Florida at the time I was down there for a convention, and just absolutely soaked that area. So yeah, raising $37 million for relief. That's far more important than anything he did as a player. And I'm not discounting what he did as a player, but I'm saying he was just a good guy, or is just a good guy. And football is just an extension of his life. It's not his whole life. It's merely how he's earned his living, but it's not what makes him who he is. Now we get to the pathetic, tragically, the sad. It involves former Major League Baseball pitcher Dennis Eckersley. Well, not really, only peripherally. In any case, this is terrible. Could have been horrific. And obviously, given the age of the victim in question, it still could end up that way. Daughter, Red Sox great Dennis Eckersley. Gosh, I don't even know. Okay. Basically, daughter of Red Sox great Dennis Eckersley left a newborn baby freezing in the woods, according to police. So she's facing a felony charge of reckless conduct after her newborn baby was found unclothed and freezing in 18-degree weather in a dark wooded area in New Hampshire early Monday. Officers responded to a report of a woman who had been given birth to a baby in a tent in the woods near the West Side Arena in Manchester, New Hampshire, just before 1 a.m. Allegedly lied to authorities about the baby's whereabouts and claimed she had given birth prematurely. After an hour of searching, police found the baby uncovered and struggling to breathe on the floor of a tent near the Piscataquag River, at Electric Street, according to the Manchester Fire Department. Police transported the infant to Catholic Medical Center. The baby's health is improving. She's set to be arraigned, blah, blah, blah. She is the adopted daughter of Dennis Eckersley. And there's a picture. Obviously, she's living in like a tent community or a tent, maybe not a community, but she's living in a tent in the woods. And given the weather that they've had in the Northeast, I can't imagine it's just sad. So you look at her picture. Obviously, I don't know if it's drugs or if it's just general mental illness. Baby may not survive still. Let's hope. But wow. That's terrible. It's just awful. And hopefully she gets whatever help she needs, because it sounds like, just arresting her is not only half the battle. And then for the bizarre and scary at the same time, we have this from The Blaze and Conservative Review. Why am I reporting stuff like this? I know. Mother saved her 10-year-old from a school that covertly transitioned her. Now she's fighting back and speaking out against the medicalization of children.
While some educators have been exposed for intentionally confusing children on matters of sex and identity, entire school boards are doubling down, with some battling in court to keep facilitating students' so-called transitions without telling parents. Jennifer, who omitted her surname for the sake of that child's her child's privacy, caught her school covertly transitioning her 10-year-old daughter. She rescued her little girl and began homeschooling. In many similar cases, the cards appear stacked against parents, particularly those unable to homeschool but wary of strangers confusing their kids and putting them on paths to sterile, drug-dependent, and disenchanted lives. She recognized that while her little girl was spared, she wouldn't be the last targeted. Educators, school administrators, pharmaceutical companies, psychologists, and other power and profit incentive parties are just getting started. So she and other parents are going on the offensive. They have formed a volunteer organization called Partners for Ethical Care. Wow. So basically, school first socially transitioned her 10-year-old without informing her. This daughter, school was using a name that she made up, so not her name that was given to her, and using different pronouns. She no longer used the girls' bathroom. Had she been 13 or older, she would have been able to use boys' facilities without Jennifer knowing, but since she was still only 10, she instead used the office washroom. A school therapist would regularly meet with Jennifer's daughter, ultimately in excess of 5 hours. In these meetings, the therapist would reportedly employ biologically inaccurate pronouns in reference to the little girl and egg on the child's temporary identity crisis. One teacher went so far as to suggest that the girl be assigned to a boys' cabin at camp. For the most part, the school elected not to keep Jennifer's family in the loop. Jennifer actually feared that Child Protective Services might break up her family, citing her refusal to accommodate the so-called transition. She also briefly pulled her daughter out of school. Fortunately, CPS never came. Now she homeschools her child. But as she said, her daughter's previous confusion, exacerbated by her LGBT friend group and by social media, did dissipate over time. But as she said, the medicalization of children is just beginning. Points out, not every parent can homeschool. Not all parents have that as an option. She also suspects Child Protective Services and other state agencies will be weaponized against families antipathetic to the medicalization of their children. She said to her mother said, this is so huge. What are you going to be able to do? And she said, I don't know, but if I don't do something, who will? She also noted that she wasn't aware of some of the other groups committed to protecting children from the transsexual agenda, but is now well acquainted with the work of Transgender Trend and others that are committed to the fight. You know, I don't know if I've related this story. I thought I had. Points out, first of all, she says, no child is born in the wrong body. Despite what some want to say, there's no such thing. So I don't know if I've told this story. I certainly wouldn't use names, although a friend of mine is retired from teaching in Orange County, Florida. Taught many years. And, you know, they have these gender policies. And she's one of the things that Jennifer talks about, get the school's gender policies, get all their policies, get their LGBT policies, get all of this stuff. But she said they sometimes keep this stuff hidden, hand you stuff that's not really their policy. They just hand you extraneous items. Well, anyway, my buddy told me this is in high school. So he'd have a student, as an example, that would, you know, want to be Jill instead of Jack. And you had to call, you know, this person by accepted pronouns, by this person's, you know, chosen pronouns. And, of course, you were suspect, you know, subject to discipline and all that stuff. But here was the thing. Let's say Jill's parent, or Jack's parent, masquerading as Jill, Let's say that parent was coming. He taught remedial math, for one thing. So a parent conference. He wasn't allowed to inform parents that this was happening. Now, it never got to the point of a parent asking about it because he didn't really see it very often. He saw it more in other classes because he's this guy. You got to know this guy. He wouldn't pussyfoot around with this kind of stuff. But literally, he wasn't allowed to interfere to the point that, well, if the parents came, he still had to go back to referring to the person as Jack and as he. When parents went around, and it was no, he had to call her Jill, call him Jill, and use she or they or whatever. So they're, in a sense, they're telling teachers to lie twice. That's how bad it is. That they literally go this far. I can't stress enough, be involved in your kid's school. You know, when you go to an assembly night or a talent night or whatever, prancing around on stage as Wilhelmina or whatever, don't put up with it. I don't care how old your kid is. Don't put up with it. I should say don't put up. Don't be left out of it. How's that? That's a better way of saying it. So I'm sensitive and all. Be informed, obviously. But you know what? It's not up to the school. It's not up to a teacher. It's not up to a counselor. Until your biological or adopted child is of a certain age, you're responsible for them. It's not control. It's responsibility. So if you're not there to protect your child, it's still on you. So don't let it happen. Speak out, man. Don't put up with it. I can't imagine that would have ever happened with my daughter. Had it happened, I can tell you, I would have been breaking my hands on some people's teeth. Unforgivable. Unforgivable. You know, as people have pointed out, and I've seen that in several places, 0.25% at most. But yet we've got these freaks that are supposed to be the mainstream, Sam Britton, Dr. Rachel Levine, whatever. You know, Sam Britton is a classic example of it being a mental disease. It's not just gender dysphoria or whatever. I mean, he's a pup handler too. I mean, what in the hell? You know, it's one thing if you got a couple of neighbors that want to do whatever, fine. Don't bring my kids into it. Same with at school. If you want to support kids' feelings, that's one thing. But if you're going to do any of it and not tell me about it, you're not going to tell me what's happening with my kid, we got a problem. And the other thing goes too, though. You know, if your kid is causing problems, got to have a right to do some discipline. I mean, we saw too many times that, you know, it's always the teacher's fault. It's always the school's fault. Well, you know, you're responsible for your kid on multiple levels. One, to protect them from the sleaziness of these people, but also you're responsible for your kid learning and performing in school. So when your kid does it, it's not the teacher's fault. It's your kid's fault, by extension, your fault. So it goes both ways, but you're responsible. Be a responsible parent. Not even sure why I have to say that, but whatever. In some COVID news, we have a couple top Aussie and Israeli doctors speaking out on vaccine injury. More importantly, they are further enlightening us to the blowback that they face when they go in this direction. In other words, as tough as it has been on those medical professionals who never supported the COVID response, i.e. the shutdown of economies or ultimately the vaccines, those who come to the realization and speak out later are possibly treated even worse, believe it or not. Here's an example. When it comes to vaccine injury, silence is certainly golden because it's the only currency valuable enough to cover up the atrocity of what was done to the entire global population over the past 2 years. Now, one doctor in Australia who admits she's not exactly a candidate for a right-wing conspiracy theorist, married to a woman, lifelong leader in sex education, former left-wing member of parliament, and former head of the Australian Medical Association. Her name is Dr. Karen Phelps. She publicly acknowledged her own injury as well as that of her partner and divulged how she faced censorship, a lack of treatment options, and a painful journey of countless hours and countless others are facing. She says it's a lot higher than governments are willing to admit. She firsthand with her wife witnessed when she suffered a severe neurological reaction to her first Pfizer vaccine within minutes, including burning face and gums, paresthesia, numb hands and feet. I mean, she says she sees this, the effects a year and a half later, adding in fatigue, additional neurological symptoms, including nerve pain, altered sense of smell, visual disturbance, and musculoskeletal inflammation. And, of course, several specialists say they have seen a lot of patients in a similar situation. Look, I told you, I got the vaccine. Luckily, I got the Johnson & Johnson. Now, as much as it may not be effective, or they say it's only 65% compared to the others, well, we now know probably that the effectiveness is crap. Absolute crap. Nothing you've heard can be believed. But more than that, what I've heard, the Johnson & Johnson is an actual vaccine. It's not one of those mRNAs. It was an actual vaccine. And so, hopefully anyway, I didn't get shot up with stuff that's going to turn me into Dr. Zaius a couple years down the road. We'll see, though. But seriously, you know, we're still reporting on COVID stuff. They shut down an economy over it. Now, look, I'm not going to, you know, President Trump was part of this at the beginning. Now, remember, as I reported last week, Tim Robbins said, you know, it's funny, we didn't want the vaccines when President Trump was pushing for it. But then how quickly, once Joe Biden was in office, we suddenly ostracized people. We turned on people. We turned on friends or whatever. But this did start under President Trump. Now, I'm not saying... I mean, he was trying to do the right thing, and he did, you know, want the economy opened back up. To his detriment, he was manipulated, I believe, in the Fauci types and all those others. But, you know, it did start under him. It did happen partly under his watch. So he's not blameless in this. But he certainly never would have envisioned what it became either. Certainly didn't want that. I'm positive of that. Vito sent me an article from The Federalist. The article talks about interesting bowl games to watch this bowl season. Vito should have read it closely. That way he'd know I'm not going to cover it today, other than the mention. Here's a hint. The Hawkeyes versus Kentucky in the Music City Bowl is not included in the article. That said, the first Big Ten bowl-related game Big Ten related bowl game took place yesterday. Wisconsin beat Oklahoma State 24-17. That's one down and seven to go. Yeah, the Big Ten, obviously leaving the bowl revenue, teams and bowl games. Sad thing is that Wisconsin's outgoing head coach, Jim Leonard, was on the sidelines and actually doing the coaching, supposedly, while incoming head coach Luke Fickell was also on the sidelines, but deferring to Leonard, supposedly. Yet he had a headset on. This is pathetic on so many levels. The saddest thing, though, it's not just the players that have been opting out of bowls, in a way. Coaches have been doing some of this stuff for far longer. At some point, all of it has got to stop. And it will be a focus of my rant later on. Very sad story out of the Buffalo area. They had over 4 feet of snow during that Christmas weekend, the blizzard. Apparently, a young girl, just 22 years old, got her car stuck in some snow on her way home from her job as an assistant at a nursing home. On December 23rd, she called 911 for help and also called family to alert them. She took video during the blizzard. She then said she was going to get some sleep in her car while waiting for first responders. Now, she was later found dead in her car by a nearby resident, PM, on Christmas night. Understandably, her family is not only crushed with the loss of this young woman, but also that no first responders ever apparently ever showed up to check on her. That's another story for another day, and I'm afraid this is one where you really can't lay blame. But it points up a topic I've discussed in the past, i.e. survival. I won't go after first response agencies for events that happen during a blizzard or a hurricane or whatever. I certainly won't go after this young woman. She was 22. She'd only recently moved to Buffalo from North Carolina. She had most likely never had to deal with this type of situation. We can speculate all we want. Did she keep her car running and ultimately suffer from carbon monoxide poisoning? Did she simply fall victim to hypothermia? Did she not have enough clothes or other materials like blankets or towels or sleeping bags to stay warm enough? Should she have left her car and tried to walk to safety? At this point, none of that really matters. Obviously, what matters, what does matter? Family's lost a young daughter, a granddaughter, sister, niece, cousin, friend. She was a student. She was working to further her education and ultimately working to carve out her future path, her destiny. Now, that's not going to happen. Look, my heart breaks for her family. And hopefully she did not suffer greatly. I pray that's the case. But I'm gonna touch on survival a little bit later because it's something people don't think about enough. But with economic issues like food and supply shortages and the rest of winter ahead, somebody needs to do it, so it may as well be me. Why not? In a bit of irony, Coastal Carolina superstar quarterback Grayson McCall entered the transfer portal at the end of the regular season. He's had some injury issues this season. His head coach at Coastal Carolina is leaving to take the job at Liberty after their coach, Hugh Freeze, left for the job at Auburn. Now, unlike a lot of kids opting out, Grayson McCall chose to stay for Coastal Carolina's bowl game against East Carolina in the Birmingham Bowl. That's Birmingham, Alabama, of course, not Birmingham, England. In any case, Grayson McCall, perhaps out of loyalty or obligation, whether to his fans or his teammates or school or whatever, he took what most would say is the honorable path. And, of course, the worst possibility was realized. He was injured while scoring on a rushing touchdown early in the second quarter. He appeared to land on his head as he was hit while crossing the goal line. He sort of dove, so that would explain it. He never returned to the game. The Chanticleers, that's their mascot, the Chanticleers interim head coach, Chad Staggs, said only that it was, quote, upper body related. And while his TD did give the team a lead, they ultimately lost 53-29, probably because they didn't have Grayson McCall. And unfortunately, this is yet another incident that, rightly or wrongly, sounds the call to some for players to sit out bowl games or to do with all, away with all but the top-tier bowls. I honestly don't have an answer. Yes, a player typically faces injury during the regular season, whether it's a conference game or non-conference game or a championship game, but bowl season is different. The games do figure into final rankings, and bowl stats do count, both for teams and for players. In reality, bowl games could give just this result, an injury that can affect a player's draft status or his career. But, you know, bowl games have also helped to elevate players, taking them from, you know, just being pro prospects to high-round draft choices. College football definitely needs to come up with something that is for certain. Former Miami Hurricane and Baltimore Raven Hall of Fame defensive back Ed Reed will be taking the head coaching job for Bethune-Cookman's football team. He's the latest high-profile former player to take a job at a historically black college or university school. Deion Sanders, of course, at Jackson State before bolting for Colorado. Former Ohio State Buckeye Heisman-winning running back Eddie George has been the head coach at Tennessee State since 2021. In addition, Bethune-Cookman men's basketball coach, who also happens to be their athletic director, is former NBAer and UNLV great Reggie Theus. It's kind of interesting to me that we are seeing this move to the historical black college and university schools from guys who themselves sort of eschewed that path for the more high-profile route of major college schools and programs. But on the other hand, maybe it'll help to bring about a move away from pretending that the have-nots don't exist. I mean, while it may not bring these schools or conferences to Power Five status, it could bring about a more integrated conference picture in FCS football, as well as getting some of the basketball programs to more equal footing with college basketball's Power Six versus the rest. I know, in football it's Power Five, in basketball it's Power Six. I'll explain that sometime. Yeah, more of this on my rant. We got another Laffy from the Babylon Bee titled, 9 Upcoming Netflix Shows Sure to Bring Back Subscribers. Now, again, I have not read this, so this could be good. Okay, 9, blah, blah, blah. Netflix has seen the writing on the wall. With subscribers leaving in droves, they're announcing some new shows that they're hoping will entice you to subscribe to their service again. Here are 9 epic shows they're really hoping will bring you back. Cuties 2, Netflix's signature classic, is back in this much anticipated sequel. 2, Gilmore Boys. You have to know, my daughter watched Gilmore Girls. Want to follow the misadventures of Rory and Lorelai, but can't accept that you're a woman in a man's body? Check out Roark and Lord as they recreate every episode of the hit show Gilmore Girls, but as trans men. Oh, God, this one's good. Queer Eye Goes to Junior High. Just like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, except set at junior high. Oh, God. All-female reboot of Firefly. Don't know the show, so if there's one fault the otherwise perfect original Firefly had, it was too many toxically masculine characters. This reboot fixes all that. Even Stranger Things, Netflix CEO Brian Netflix, has acknowledged that Stranger Things really put their original programming on the map. So, here's more. 6, The Drag Queen's Gambit. A down-on-their-luck drag queen breaks glass ceilings in tournament checkers. 7, Ryan Reynolds and The Rock team up to blow up more things. But this time it's personal. 8, Breaking Boy. Creator Vince Gilligan presents a coming-of-age story of a young boy breaking into the human trafficking business. And 9, this is good. CNN Plus. The hours of unseen programming will find a new life on Netflix. Get ready for Jake Tapper's Book Club Season 2. CNN Plus. Here we are mere months afterwards, and I had forgotten about CNN Plus. That's right. Oh, God, CNN Plus. Who could forget? I'm going to take a quick break. Then we'll come back with some rants and a little more talk about college football and a little talk about Survivor. Hey, why not? Let's keep the Christmas theme going. Why not?
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all. With those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happiest season of all. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful time. Oh, the most wonderful time.
And we are back, the inimitable Andy Williams with Most Wonderful Time of the Year. Yes, it's still Christmas, folks. I know a lot of people say, oh, Christmas is over. No, it's not. If you're a Christian and you understand the liturgical calendar, it's definitely not. And heck, in the Eastern Orthodox Church, it's not even Christmas yet, in a way. Anyway, let's bring on Hawkeye Mike for a bit. Mike, how you doing, sir?
Doing well. How you doing, Hank?
Oh, pretty good. You had a good Christmas?
Yeah, I did. Nothing too exciting, but very nice. Had a nice rib roast. What more can you ask?
Yeah, you can't ask. Now, did you make the rib roast? Did you make the rib roast or no?
I did. I've got a foolproof recipe to cook it that, you know, it's like prime rib for dummies, right? You cannot screw it up. And, I mean, there's a million recipes out there, but I found one that works for me, and it comes out perfect every time.
How big was the roast? How many ribs did you have on it? Was it like a...
I got boneless, actually, which I regretted. Oh, okay. I wish I... Because I normally would. 5-pounder.
Yeah.
So we had plenty of leftovers, so...
Yeah. Well, that's the whole point of the rib roast.
Good deal.
Me.
Good deal. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, I bought one at the store. The store, one of the local stores had a good sale. So I bought one, and then we had so much going on, so I didn't make it for that. So I'm thinking of making it for New Year's, so I'll have it out for.
Yeah, there
you
go.
Of course, it'll last several days. Let's put it that way. So, have you watched any of the bowl games yet?
No, I haven't actually. I've been I've been kind of focusing a little bit more on the pro games. I haven't. I'm not aware of anything I really wanted to see yet.
Yeah.
To me, it's like the first big bowl day is going to be the 31st.
Yeah,
not
I know. It's
Iowa, but you've got the two semifinal college games and stuff. And,
exactly. I mean, it just hasn't been. Did you watch the basketball game last week, the Hawkeye game?
I actually was out doing some stuff, and I missed. I forgot about the game. In fact, I didn't think that it would be a problem at all. Silly me.
No,
the Eastern Illinois game.
And
I was just shocked when I got back how they could blow that game. Especially, it looks like they had an 8-point halftime lead. Like it's a real WTF moment.
Yeah.
What happened there? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know where to go for. So, what's anything politically that's popped up recently that's caught your eye or surprised
well, you know,
you or anything?
Than what they call the dead week. Other than following the escapades, like you've got Bankman-Fried out of the Bahamas, out of the Caribbean, and into staying at his parents or something in California. President Joe heads down to the Virgin Islands while the rest of the country's freezing their you know what's off. Which to me was a pretty dumb move politically, but I guess he thinks he can get away with it, and the press will cover for him. So,
yeah,
but,
I don't know.
I don't know.
The guy's charmed.
Not a good optic, though. I think.
No, definitely
not. Doing that.
Definitely not. I mean, with the Twitter file dumps, with all the stuff that we found out about the FBI. I mean, is there? I don't know how you do it. I mean, we always say, this country was built, the founders were geniuses, but Well, the stuff that we're finding out, you know, the FBI collusion on so much stuff, and probably CIA collusion as well. Have we reached the point? Have we reached the point where we've just got to blow it all up? Do you think, or is there any saving it?
I'm kind of the point where I think at least the CIA could, maybe is another topic, but because we don't know quite. I mean, I have suspicions about what they've been up to, but. But the FBI, it's almost like root and branch, you know, I kind of feel like. Someone mentioned that they should go to these, like, the church. Remember the church committee hearings back in the 70s on the CIA? You need to kind of do that for the FBI. And at the time, of course, that was a bunch of lefty Democrats who didn't like the CIA because they didn't like, they were doing things that might help America. But they did find some abuses, I think. I think that if they did hearings on the FBI, it would make the church committee pale in comparison. So let's hope. I think they're going to do some stuff, but I don't expect the administration or the FBI to cooperate. So it's going to be like pulling teeth, probably.
And what about the January 6th committee? Are they going to come up with – I mean, I know they're referring, quote-unquote, for criminal prosecution of President Trump. Is that going to go anywhere, or is that just grandstanding before
– It's grandstanding. The DOJ is doing their own – you got the special counsel. They're doing their own stuff. And it's all going to be up to, you know, what they want to do anyway. And so the January 6th committee – most of the stuff they referred was based on the supposed conduct of Donald Trump and others. Well, this was focused on Trump particularly on January 6th, and it's not going to go anywhere. The thing they're probably going to try to get Trump on is going to be this, the stuff that they raided Mar-a-Lago for. And it's going to try to say, you know, he violated the Records Act and improperly held classified material. I think that's going to be, the old joke about how if the government wants to, they can indict him. See, that's the thing is, and they just want to do it. If they want to get him, and I think they do, they can find something.
Yeah.
It's like the old saying from Stalin's henchman Beria, his then head of the KGB, the thing, you know, show me the man and I'll find the crime. Well, that's kind of what we got going on with our current Justice Department. But I think that they're really, I mean, I think that it's going to look so political.
Yeah.
When if they indict him, and the guy's already announced for president and. You know, even with all the dust settles, he's probably the front runner to become the nominee. You can argue over whether it should be him or it's time for a new generation, but that's the bottom line. And if they indict him, and I think we have to be ready that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just going to look so political for this Justice Department to go after basically the main. Opposition to the current president. Yeah. It's just going to cannot get around it.
I don't understand. I mean, there's so much that's come out of things that others did not do, you know, that Pelosi and others did not do before January 6th. How is that being held in a, almost as if they're turning a blind, how is that possible that they're doing that? You know, I mean, how is that not going to come out?
It doesn't help their narrative, but that's a good thing that you're raising, because what they could do is, if you know, with Republicans now in the House having the control, they start hearings and they start shining the light on Pelosi and getting her up there in front of the committees, and apparently there's some pretty glaring stuff, that omissions, lack of, shall we say, due diligence and security that day, and that stuff comes out. I think that the more that happens, it really makes it hard for the Justice Department to try to continue to single out Trump and try to indict him on something related to January 6th, or really even on the record stuff. But we'll see. So the problem is that if they do indict him for supposedly having all this classified material. By the way, as president, he had plenary power to declassify anything he wanted. And I would argue that if he treated it like it was declassified, it was declassified. That's the kind of power the president of the United States has.
Yeah.
So I just think it would be hard to prevail on that. But anything they try to get him for on that, the question becomes, and Hillary skated? You know, she had what, 33,000 emails?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Numerous classified documents. And you had Comey up there saying that no reasonable prosecutor would charge her, even though she violated these laws and had classified material. And if they turn around and try to do it to Trump, I mean, what's the difference here? Other than
Trump's a Republican, and
she was a Democrat.
To me, I mean, you know, the biggest tell isn't what, you know, like people like Hannity or whoever. Hannity's a bad example. He's just an entertainer. But, you know, these experts, you know, media experts and such that come out, I think the biggest tell is Alan Dershowitz's reaction, because Dershowitz is anything but conservative, you know, and he will be the first person to tell you that. But he's looking at this stuff and he's saying, this is insanity. I mean, you know, there's no legal ground. I mean, he repeatedly says it on every level. And that's what tells me for the most, you know, before all else, you know, versus the partisan stuff. You know, it's just his reaction to it. And that's what, you know, surprised me. What's the latest on the Kerry Lake thing? I mean, has everything been thrown out at this point?
Well, the latest is that she is appealing. She lost in the trial court.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is like, you look at this thing, it's very difficult to prevail on something like this. You just have to understand that because, I'm not an expert on election law, but my understanding, just from a cursory read of things, is that they had to show intentional, not just that certain bad things happened, but that this was done intentionally. And when you get into that kind of specific intent, very difficult to prove it, you know, as opposed to just being incompetence or something.
I think
that the way the election was conducted, particularly in Maricopa County, which used to live down there for many years, it's the biggest county in by far.
Yeah.
It's like 60% of the entire vote of the state comes out of Maricopa County, something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the way it's just, I mean, there's a lot of coincidences, right? There appears to have been problems almost exclusively, it appears, in areas that would have been more favorable to Lake than to Katie Hobbs,
yeah.
Democrat. And but having lost at – here's the problem. Having lost in the trial court where they did have a trial, she presented witnesses and evidence. I did do a quick read of the court's findings, and the bottom line was that the court made specific findings of fact about that did not rise to the level that would warrant, you know, a finding that the election was so badly botched that it needs to be nullified and there's going to be a new election. It went the other way. So the problem on appeal is it's not just a question of challenging the court's interpretation of law, but it's the court's interpretation, because there was no jury, it was a bench trial. Court, and so the court, I don't want to get too much in the weeds here, but the court was acting not just ruling on law, but also finding facts. And it's the fact finding that's on appeal. The standard of review is very differential, very deferential. If you do not have basically overwhelming evidence that no reasonable person could have come to that conclusion, the court's going to have to uphold on appeal the findings of fact by the fact finder, which in this case was court. So I'm just, the bottom line is it's going to be very difficult. I think she's out of legal remedies, to tell you the truth, as a practical matter.
Yeah.
She's not going to, I'd be very surprised if she was to get any benefit from the appeal. I think it's going to go against her. And you know, I think you can make an argument that the best thing she could do is to try to, because I don't think her political career is over by a long shot, particularly if she handles this right.
Exactly.
You know, there's a Senate election in 2 years where this Kyrsten Sinema has left the Democratic Party. It could be a three-way race, which would really help the Republicans, because whoever the Democrats nominate and Sinema are going to split that side of the vote, I think.
Yeah, I
and,
would think so.
It's a good, and I think Lake, you know, the point I'm trying to say is she should try to conserve her viability as a candidate. Don't get too far into the weeds of what looks like just complete sour grapes. You can talk about how this the system itself was screwed up, wrong, and needs to be changed. But that for the good of the state and everything, you're going to accept the rulings of the court and move on. I think that might help her and preserve her if she wants to run for governor again in 4 years or in the Senate in 2 years.
Yeah, I would
think. I think she could still be a good candidate.
And lastly, on the political front, what do you think of supposedly Mike Pence has filed papers to run for president in 2024? Is he serious? Or Mike Pence? Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yes. Oh, that guy. Oh, yeah. Okay. I forgot about him. Well, that's a big yawn, isn't it, kind of? there's one guy that can probably give Trump a run for his money if he gets in it, and I know you don't want to. Yeah, you like him as your governor, but that would be
But as we talked about before, you know, there's no time like the present for him. You know, yes, we'd love to keep him as governor, but you know, why wait? You know, I mean, if he finishes out his term, he's going to have 2 years.
Right?
He's going to have 2 years to wait. You know, because his term's up in 2026, so he'd have 2 years to wait for that. You know, and that's just I don't know that that's the smart thing either. So, you know, you strike while the iron's hot. I mean, I heard the other day.
I think you're right, and I think that's what's going to happen. I think we're heading toward, and I don't know what's going to happen, by the way, if this happens, as far as who ultimately wins. But I think we are looking toward Trump DeSantis. I think DeSantis' campaign is going to be pretty much, I agree with everything Trump does. I have nothing. I think he did a great job as president. Time for a new generation of leadership, you know, that's going to be kind of the thing. And, you know, Trump, I don't know, he's not going to take it very well if DeSantis gets in, but I think you better prepare for it because I do think there's a lot of people getting behind DeSantis to try to get him to do this. And he's going to have a lot of money if he gets in.
Yeah. The question is, well, you know, who can he trust? You know, I mean, unfortunately, President Trump found that out, really, in a way. But, you know,
I think there is going to be other people getting in, you know, whether it's Pence. I think, you know, Mike Pompeo, there's a few other people that might run. I don't think they go very far. I think after the first couple of primaries, if not even before that, it's basically going to come down. It would come down mano a mano between DeSantis and Trump. Yeah. And it's anybody's pick at that point.
I actually heard a comment from someone that said, you know, look, DeSantis isn't going to jump in too quickly. I mean, he's got a lot of time to jump in, but why jump in now? Because in one sense, as they say, you know, Trump has done a lot of stuff to shoot himself in the foot. And the other thing Trump has done historically is even when he's done stuff like that, he has a remarkable ability to recover from those things and to right his ship, you know? I mean, so that's a real concern.
If you're DeSantis, you know, there's been some talk about how apparently they're saying that he never would do it, make any announcement before the legislative session in Florida, which I think runs till May or June.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know, so I wouldn't look for anything before that. And then, you know, I think you're right. You know, you can, by the way, you can do a lot of stuff behind the scenes before you officially declare.
Right, exactly.
First, I don't know when the first filing requirements would be to try to get involved in you know, on the Democratic side, there's a lot of flux over the primaries. They apparently have voted to get rid of Iowa and New Hampshire. I think like South Carolina and a couple other states are going to maybe be first. I don't know if the Republicans are going to follow suit on that or if they're going to keep the traditional sort of calendar for the primaries.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough call.
But that'll be interesting to see what happens there. But I don't know when the first filing deadlines are. Probably not till – you could probably not make an official announcement till October if you wanted to.
Yeah. Oh, I would think.
But I don't see any hurry for DeSantis, especially if he's sort of getting his ducks in a row anyway.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
He wouldn't actually have to pull the trigger maybe till fall.
Yeah. I think some people have said, what about a Trump-DeSantis ticket? I think, you know, in a real sense, that's two guys from Florida. I mean, I know Trump's originally not from Florida, but he's considered a Florida resident now. I think that just would not be a – I don't think that would be a very successful ticket that way. I just don't. But, you know, that's just my thought. I don't know.
Yeah,
I can't.
Plus, I think I think by the time you got to a primary with these two, I mean, who knows, right? But I think whoever emerges, whether it was Trump or DeSantis, there will be some pressure on them to try to diversify the ticket by not just having two white guys.
Yeah.
You know, somebody like a Tim Scott, South Carolina, or a female Nikki Haley type, or, you know, you can throw in whoever, Joni Ernst style, even somebody like that as vice president for either whoever, whether it was Trump or DeSantis that emerged as a nominee, there'd be, you know, the thing about it is if you think about it, let's say Trump's the nominee, does get the nomination. He can only serve one term, right? So whoever the vice president is going to be a particularly important pick because they're really going to be almost immediately in the catbird seat to be the next president in 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just
so assuming Trump was to win.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, he was not my first.
Biden supposedly he's making the big decision on whether he's going to run. That's what he's going on down in St. Croix, down in the Virgin Islands right now. I guess we can all wait with bated breath on that.
Yeah, Dr. Jill's deciding whether she wants to.
right. Telling him whether,
I've said, you know, I don't think any of us know about, you know, whether you meet someone at the pearly gates or whatever, but if there's a point where she's going to have to answer for elder abuse. I mean, it's just as simple as that. I mean,
but everybody in that White House
knows
even more than we see. Just, I think how cognitively challenged this guy is, and they don't seem to care because, I mean, you really makes you wonder who's pulling the trigger, who's running the show. I don't know whether it's a combination. My guess is it's probably a combination of Jill, Ron Klain, maybe Susan Rice is like the big domestic.
Yeah. I still think
person.
Obama's got.
And,
I still
and
think
maybe
Obama's
a little
got
bit
his
of, yeah, I was going to say, and a little bit of Obama thrown in there too, much as he can be bothered to get involved. I just don't think Joe's really calling the shot.
Yeah, Banjo 80 in our chat room says it's Obama. I tend to agree with Banjo 80. So that's just me.
I think that's possible.
I mean, you know, I don't think on a day-to-day basis, maybe not, but I think there's a lot of strategy that whether it's Obama
or whoever's
behind.
Well, it's all Obama's people,
him.
Right? Most of the people that are working for Biden are all Obama's people,
Exactly.
You know, pretty much.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, unfortunately, we're still, you know, Trump announced, I forgot what he announced, but it was in 2015. It was not so that's the problem. I mean, the precedent in a sense is set now that you've almost got to start actively campaigning at the beginning of the year before the election. I mean, you know, so I'm not ready for almost 2 years of electioneering, but I guess that's just what we've got to come to expect. So
ready or not, right? You know,
exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just, you know, I never put much hope in the whole Carrie Lake thing. I think once she was done. And I think there's just, you know, there's too much that goes on, you know, legitimate or otherwise. But, you know, you would have thought that if in 2020 that certain people would have learned or certain people would have figured out a better solution. I mean, you know, there's a host of other things, you know, Fetterman getting elected. I mean, as you said, Oz wasn't that great a candidate, but, you know, had he debated before all the elections, you know, the early voting started, would he still have won? You know, there's that kind of stuff that's gone on. I mean, there's a whole host of stuff. It's not just about who counts the ballots or the legitimacy. I mean, there's a whole host of other things that play into it. I think that's, you know, where reform is needed and where that really comes from we the people and not, you know, we can't sit around and wait for lawmakers to decide it. It's got to come from us, you know. I mean, we've got to be able to vet these people and, you know, earlier.
I think Republicans just need to sort of, you know, I mean, you can't, you're not going to get with the Democrats, you know, having set a lot of this stuff up already,
yeah,
you're not going to just wave a wand and get rid of the way we have elections right now. And so Republicans got to get in the game and play the game. Because the minute that the Democrats don't get an advantage over what they've set up, the minute they're going to lose interest in it.
Yeah.
And so the real way to get rid of the – I mean, some of this, the way elections are conducted in this country are an absolute trap. So you can even go back 10 years. And almost – just 10 years ago, almost when Romney lost, almost every state was doing elections on election day.
Yeah.
And, you know, California started doing this, and now it's just this trend. Now this ranked choice garbage is coming through. Nevada apparently is going to move to that. But there's no reason that whatever the system is, Republicans just need to learn to play it.
Yeah.
So that Democrats
are
trying to manipulate everything. Yeah, and then where they can, and there has been some of that that's, I think, done this time, they have – change things. There's a big, huge case now going up to the Supreme Court. Probably won't get a decision until the summer, but the question is that the Constitution basically says that it's up to the legislatures of every state to set the time, place, and manner for the holding of elections.
Yeah.
And what happened in the state of North Carolina, and this is true in a lot of states, they had a Republican-controlled legislature they passed, and it was a gerrymandered map, no doubt about it. But and what happened was it went to the Supreme Court, where the governor couldn't veto it under their system, but he appointed the Supreme Court. The governor of North Carolina is a Democrat.
Yeah.
And basically the Supreme Court of the state threw it out, and they imposed these new maps where Republicans would have had probably about a 10-4 advantage, and now it's 7-7.
Yeah.
Now, this has happened in some other states. Now, conversely, in New York, the Democrats tried to set something up, but the Supreme Court of that state, the New York Court of Appeals, it's called, threw that out, and it was heavily gerrymandered in favor of the Democrats. But the difference there was that the legislature – had passed a law basically setting up and they tried to get around it, which is why a Democratic court even wouldn't go by it. But the bottom line is if the Supreme Court, as I think this may happen, says that it is up to the states and it's not up to the state. By the way, Pennsylvania did this in 2020. They went around the state legislators, set up all the mail-in balloting, and they
used
the Supreme Court to do it, the state Supreme Court. But if what I think is going to happen, which is that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to say it is up to the, you know, you got to go by the wording of the Constitution, it's up to the states to make decisions on the time, place, and manner of elections, and the governors and the courts of the state don't get to, you know, it's up to the state. That's what the Constitution says. Then that's going to really change some things. Now, you're going to be back to where you have, you know, depending on who controls the legislatures of the state. You know, we saw, like, in Illinois, your old home state, there the Democrats control everything, and they heavily gerrymandered the maps there.
Yeah.
You know, there's no shame on either side when they can get away with it, let's be clear. But it's always been that way for 200-plus years. And it's just, you know, the Democrats have been trying to use the courts to thwart Republican efforts where they control the state legislatures to draw favorable maps for Republicans. And they had some success going to the state courts and even to the lower federal courts. But I think the Supreme Court's going to bring down the hammer on that. It's going to be a very important decision coming out probably at the end of June of the new year.
Yeah.
That's going to really change the way elections – that could really change the way elections are dealt with in this country.
Yeah. Definitely. Something Banjo80 says in the chat says Biden. Some say he's dead and is played by more than one actor. Two totally different earlobes and sometimes brown eyes, sometimes blue. Don't know, just saying. I mean, I don't know that I go that far, but it makes me wonder. I don't think he's dead only because
maybe Tom Shalhoub really does stand in for this guy.
You know, but I mean, regardless, I mean, there are several things. I mean, that you look at him. You look at him, and you can see, you know, that he is not all there. I mean, it's just, you know, that's the thing. I mean, it's just kind of, You know, it just, I don't know. It just kind of, I mean, how it happened, you know, it's past, you know, there's not much we can do. I mean, even for those that are saying there's stuff in motion now to overturn, you know, that's not going to happen. You know, they're not going to overturn the 2020 election. There's no reason at this point, you know, the problem is mitigating the damage that the administration will do. So, but I mean,
well,
I
just, you know, it's amazing. You can go back just 6 years to the, look at, you can Google it. Look at Biden's speech at the 2016 Democratic Convention. He gave a speech. And you compare the way that he acts and talks and his articulation then, the 6 years ago, a little over 6 years ago, and the way he is now. It's amazing. It's night and day. It's almost shocking.
Yeah. It is shocking.
You know, just in six short years.
And how do they – I mean, I think – well, again, it's the fact that the media covers for them, and the fact that, you know, I mean, it's just the whole thing. So it's
that's all of it right there.
Yeah. Okay. So let's swerve a bit to the game Saturday. What are you afraid we might see? What are you afraid that will happen? If the worst, what's the worst you could see happening?
Well, are you talking about the Hawks, or are you talking about some of the other games first?
No, the Hawks first. I mean, what would disappoint you the most?
Oh, it'd be difficult to be disappointed, right? Here's why. There's a lot of we've got a new quarterback, obviously. I think it's going to be Labus. I think he's been named the starter.
Yeah, he
is. We could see Carson May. There's been some stuff that Sam LaPorta has been taking snaps at quarterback, which, you know,
Sam LaPorta?
News to me. News to me. I don't know why, but I'm assuming that Labus is going to get the start, and we'll see how he does. I wouldn't get my hopes up too much because the guy hasn't really played a down in of competitive football at the FBS level. So But I do think that we will see, if he has struggles at all throwing the ball or whatever, a guy that's a lot more mobile than we've seen. And he may actually surprise. He'll pull a college version of a Brock Purdy. And then everybody will wonder why this guy was benched the entire year. But to me, that's the most interesting thing that will come out of this game Saturday. Is to see how Iowa performs offensively with him at the helm, and they're gonna be shorthanded. We know Kevon Merriweather's not playing, but I do believe Jack Campbell is, and Benson are playing. We now know Nico Regaini, however you pronounce his name now. I'm gonna call him Regaini because I always have.
Yeah,
is coming back.
And Noah Shannon and, is considering
it's going to be a new look Iowa offense, I think. Even if Brian Ferentz comes back, which I'm half expecting he will, I think there's going to be a new look to the offense next year. The key thing, though, is because you're going to have a whole lot of different characters. We'll see if Labus looks good and maybe can give Cade McNamara a run. The one thing about Cade McNamara that I question is his health. He's had some health issues. And I think if he's healthy, I think he'll definitely start. But whoever the quarterback is, I mean, if it was, Trevor Lawrence was to be put into the Iowa quarterback position, and I do think that there'll be a new look a little bit maybe as far as trying to be a little more dynamic. But it's all going to come down to the performance of the offensive line.
Yep.
And if that line is not improved, Cade McNamara is not going to right all the wrongs with Iowa's offense or anyone else.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think what would disappoint me most is if we just – well, a poor performance from the line, obviously. But if we just see the same type of – I should say mismanagement. I mean, look, Brian – Ferentz has had good games, good game calling, but for the most part, I don't think his problem has been that he's just – I think he's just not – and it's not just Brian Ferentz. I mean, Greg Davis had it too. I just think, you know, we have too often times when we've just – you know, when the run is working and we don't use it. or we don't try to establish establish. And I think, you know, bottom line is Iowa's offense is predicated on a good run game that sets up the play action. That's how we've worked best historically. You know, and that's what we have
to,
you know.
I think if you notice in the past, you know, and you can go back to the Beathard years, which isn't that long ago, 5-6 years back and before, the difference was, it seemed to me, well, I think the offensive lines were of a higher quality than we've had the last year or two. But I think there's some room for optimism, even though we don't have Caden Proctor coming in. I think this Bo Stevens could be good. I think, some of the other guys can, you know, let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like what you're talking about, the run, is Iowa, if you go back and look, they would run, and a lot of times less than spectacularly in the first half. You know, you just like didn't seem to be working, but they'd stayed at it. And then the second half would come, and all of a sudden you're getting 4 or 5 yards a pop every time where you were getting 2 or 3 before in the first half.
Yep.
And it was just a question of wearing down the defense. And then from that, you get the play action. And that was the way Iowa would eventually prevail and get what they needed to get done offensively. But I think we've seen, and maybe it's just because of the quality of the offensive line, I don't know, where we would never try to sustain the running game and would be too quick to try to, you know, the thing to me that's really been killing Iowa in the last couple of years is we're getting into these third and long situations or you're losing, like you end up 2nd and 15. And then when Iowa's offense is not going to do well, I don't care who you are, when you're putting yourself into 3rd and longs or 2nd and longs and you're not able to get some yards consistently on first down, it's not a recipe for success for Iowa. And,
no, it's not.
And all too often, we saw it this year, we saw it last year too, Iowa was continually in situations where they were, you know, they'd botch things on first down, or maybe they'd get 5 yards on first down, and then you'd lose 7 on 2nd, and 3rd and 12. You just can't do that.
No.
They've got to change that if they're going to succeed offensively, and that's really – to me, that's the thing that I can see over and over again that's been killing them on offense. And,
yep,
you know,
exactly.
So the way I look at it, you know, is let's see if we see a little bit more imagination and verve on the Iowa offense in this bowl game. There's nothing to hold back, right? You know, let's go for it. And, you know, the worst that can happen is you lose the game, but let's see, you got Labus, you got maybe more of a dual threat. When's the last time that happens? You have to go back to Beathard probably, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see, you know. That's going to be the exciting thing, and see if you know, sometimes, you know, you get a more mobile quarterback that can buy a little more time that can help that offensive line out too, and the run game. So I'll be looking to see if there's any signs of life in the Iowa offense that could really – allow us to build on something next year when I would expect to see some more talent coming in. Not just McNamara, but I think this Eric All is going to be a real asset at tight end. So even though we're losing Laporta with Lachey and All, you still got the dual threat at tight end.
Exactly. And I think that's going to be a huge help. So, hey, I've got to let you go now so I can finish my one rant, or not my rant, my survival talk that I was going to get into. But thanks for being on. And if I don't talk to you beforehand, have a happy new year. And go Hawks.
You bet. Go Hawks. Thanks, Hank. Same to you. Happy New Year.
Thanks. You too. Talk to you later. Okay, that was Hawkeye Mike, of course. Always a pleasure to talk with him, and he's always insightful, of course. So I talked earlier about this poor girl and her family's heartbreak after that blizzard in Buffalo. While I was looking through that story, I also saw other headlines and story links. A missing doctor found dead after surveillance video leads Michigan cops to frozen pond. A hiker who planned 1 week on Appalachian Trail has been missing 2 months. Buffalo winter storm death toll continues to rise. Now, these are winter-related stories, but it kind of reminds us that survival, or more importantly, preparation, are necessary. Those of us in hurricane-prone areas already know this. So let's close 2022 with a little mini lesson on survival, like I said. First, always have a plan. Whether you're driving to the grocery store or across several states, be aware, be prepared. I mean, you wouldn't drive from Atlanta to Seattle without stretching it with a full gas tank, right? In winter or during hurricane season, the same thing applies. First, you may not find gas during times like this. But in addition to that, in winter especially, a low or near empty gas tank can cause fuel line to freeze, makes it difficult to start your car. Don't know if that's the situation with this girl, but that's, you know. Second, have certain items on hand. I don't know what she did or didn't have, but you should always have certain things in your house and in your vehicles. Again, you wouldn't drive from Miami to Maine without suitable clothing. You know, you're going to pass multiple weather scenarios. In the winter, you need to stay warm and dry. That means having warm clothes and dry clothes, extra clothes. So if you're out driving around a lot, keep stuff. You know, jackets that keep you dry, stuff that keeps you warm. Trips, too, by the way. Look at this girl. She's just driving home from work. Third, usually most important, how about food and water and shelter as well? The best clothes won't matter if you have no roof over your head or a car to use as temporary refuge. Having new food for multiple days is one thing. Without water, yeah, you die. So keep water in your car with you. And by the way, don't eat snow as a water source. It literally lowers your body temperature and you can die of hypothermia. Keep good non-perishable foods with you. Jerky, dried fruits, nuts. Just have that kind of stuff. Have a lighter and matches in your car. I know you used to think about car lighters, but a lot of them don't even come with cigarette lighters. So keep a good lighter handy. Keep sturdy wooden matches. It's also a good idea to keep some stuff to light, newspaper, twigs, whatever. Keep your phone charged. Really, keep your phone charged. That's important to be able to keep up with what's going on. Look, this is sad what happened to this girl in Buffalo. So let's remember to be safe, but also let's remember to be prepared. You know, think about it. Just the shortest trips can be catastrophic. Let people know where you are. Cases, what happened? People didn't know to be looking for them because they didn't communicate a plan. It was a several days before anybody looked for this missing doctor in Michigan, that kind of thing. People in Buffalo thought this girl was going to get help. She didn't. So just be safe. In the meantime, folks, this is the last show of the year, as I said. In 2023, as Mike said, we need to hold Biden and the Democrats accountable. We need to hold the alphabet agencies accountable. And also, next year, I hope to do more call-ins, have people call in more. That's what makes it fun. Meanwhile, have a safe weekend. Good night. Happy New Year, everyone. I will be back next week, God willing. God bless. Be safe out there, and Happy New Year. We will talk to you all next year. Good night, folks. Have a good one. Let's not forget to thank Sue and Mike for listening and Banjo 80 in the chat room. Good night, folks. Be safe.